some people look at their dogs and think about the kinds of things that they're seeing their dogs do and think, well, my dog has to have an abstract concept of friendship or love or something like that in order to be showing this kind of behavior.
I'm Phil Hatterman, and this is Dog Words presented by Rosie Fund. Today, we welcome back our favorite cognitive behavior researcher, Dr. Ellen Furlong, to discuss dogs and abstract thinking. I think you'll be impressed by the clever way researchers figured out how to study this, and you'll find another activity you can enjoy with your dog. If you're new to Dog Words, in each episode we explore the world of dog care and companionship. We save each other is the motto of Rosie Fund, which simply means the more we do for dogs, the more they do for us, and they already do a lot. You can support Rosie Fund by making a donation on our website or Facebook page. You can also contribute by making a purchase from the store on our website, buying a t-shirt at bonfire.com, or buying our note cards featuring Rosie and Peaches, and our shirts on barkyours.com. Links are in the description. Your donations and purchases help fund the Rosie Life Starter Kits that make sure these senior and harder-to-adopt dogs have some of the items they'll need in their forever home. Any donation amount is greatly appreciated, but here are some popular levels. $30 provides a collar and a leash for a Rosie Life Starter Kit dog, and $100 covers their entire kit. Follow us on social media, even if you aren't looking for a dog. Watching and sharing the videos helps our channel gain exposure, bringing awareness to our cause and giving shelter dogs much-needed attention. Our free Rosie Fund YouTube channel offers great videos of Rosie, Peaches, and shelter dogs looking for their forever home. We welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions, especially if you have an idea for a topic or guest. Go to the podcast page at rosiefund.org to share your thoughts. Next time on Dog Words, co-founder of Kansas City's Bar K Dog Bar, Labe Dodel, gives us a tour of their beautiful location in St. Louis. It's so much more than a dog park, bar, or restaurant. The mission of Rosie Fund is to provide humans with the resources and education they need to give senior and harder-to-adopt dogs a better life. We thank you for joining our mission. Today on Dog Words, we are excited to welcome back for the third time Dr. Ellen Furlong from Transylvania University. Welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here as usual.
We've gotten lots of downloads and great feedback when we've had you on before because this is just a fascinating topic. People are fascinated by dogs anyway. Mm-hmm. But the insight that you provide on how their brains work and more generally how other mostly mammals, is I think exclusively mammals that we've talked about, how their brains work. You talk about non-human primates and other studies that you've been involved in. Tell us what you're up to now. Where are you at? What studies are you working on?
Sure. Yeah. Since we last spoke, I've had several changes. So I've moved institutions. I was at Illinois Wesleyan for 9 years, but have just returned to my alma mater, Transylvania University. My former undergraduate research advisor has just retired, and I am taking her spot. So I'll be doing the same kinds of things I was doing at Illinois Wesleyan, but a little bit closer to home. So I'm excited about the move.
I should probably clarify that you are not in the Carpathian Mountains. You're in Lexington, Kentucky.
Lexington, Kentucky, yes.
Is where Transylvania University is located.
Yes, Transylvania confuses a lot of people. So yeah,
you're not speaking to me from your castle lair.
Yes. I wish. But Transylvania means across the woods, and it was the first university founded west of the Allegheny Mountains. So founded in 1780. So it was an apt name. It was certainly across the woods at that time.
Yeah, they were Transylvania before Bram Stoker made Transylvania popular.
That's right, yeah.
So you are now at Transylvania University, and I want to talk more about whatever research you're working on, but what prompted me to contact you for this follow-up interview was an article that I read at futurity.org, and I will link to the article in the description for this episode. The study is in the Journal of Comparative Psychology. I didn't read that because that's probably a little over my head, but this article is very accessible. Mm-hmm. They talked to Allison Skagel, a graduate student who is at the University of Buffalo Psychology Department, studying whether or not dogs are capable of forming abstract concepts. Mm-hmm. as a dog owner, you're never sure, am I anthropomorphizing the dog? Am I attributing some sort of behavior to an ability to problem solve or think abstractly? Or is it just a dog's instinct or reflex or me projecting something onto them? So it's fascinating, one, that someone has done this study, and two, that they came up with what seems to be a recurring theme when I've talked to you about these kinds of studies, an ingenious but elegantly simple way to study something. So yeah. Can you kind of explain, first of all, what they were studying and then how they did it?
Yeah. So this idea of sort of abstract reasoning is one that has kind of been of interest to psychologists for a long time. So when psychology was a brand new science, people were really interested in sort of stripping away a lot of things that you can't actually measure and focusing on studying only things that are measurable. So this was sort of in the early days of psychology, this behaviorist movement, where all the research was really about how people respond or how animals respond to a stimulus. So think about Pavlov's bell, right? Mm-hmm. So the animal hears the bell and they respond by salivating. And so really all research that was happening in the early days of psychology was really about, let's only study the things that we can very clearly measure, like how much saliva there is that the dog is salivating, right? So this was the sort of behaviorist time of psychology. Shortly after that, psychology kind of shifted a little bit. We have what psychologists call the cognitive revolution that came about after this, where we realized that we can actually scientifically measure things that we thought were previously unobservable. This is where these really clever experiments that you're talking about, where we really have to tap into something that's hard to define, really started to take shape. So one of these classic studies, I love this study, was done by Edward Tolman. And what Tolman did was he put rats in a maze. For half of the rats, there was a food box at the end. So the rats had to run the race. And at the end, they got the food. And for the other half of the rats, there was no food at the end. They just sort of ran around the maze until the researchers plucked them out. And then they ran through the maze again the next day. And so the rats all ran through the maze for 10 days, either getting food or not getting food. And then at the end of that, those 10 days of maze running, the researchers gave the rats who had not been rewarded for running the maze before food. So here, according to the behaviorist view, this is when the rats should start to learn something about how the maze works, because before they haven't been reinforced for it, they haven't earned anything for
it. No incentive.
No incentive, exactly. So before they should have just been mindlessly meandering and not have actually learned anything about the maze. But actually what happened is on that next day, I guess now we're on the 12th day, when the rats get in the maze, they've been reinforced one time for running the maze. They get in and they behave just like the rats who had been reinforced all along. They solved the maze really fast. They made very few errors. They got to the goal box very quickly. So what this showed was that the rats had actually been learning something all along, even though they weren't displaying it. And so this was a problem for that kind of behaviorist view, because at that point, we thought that everything was, well, I wasn't born yet. Psychologists thought that everything was about, you know, this sort of stimulus response. So without the response, the demonstrating that you learned something, you really can't say that there had been any learning. But here, what the rats are showing us is that they had been learning all along. They called this latent learning. So it's learning without reinforcement. And this and other studies around the time really shifted the way that people thought about psychology, and in particular about animal psychology. And so now, with this cognitive revolution, now we began to study things that had previously been thought were inaccessible to the scientific gaze. Now we're coming with this study to another example of something that we previously thought was going to be really hard to study in non-human animals. And this is this idea of abstract ideas or sort of mental representations.
Well, with a human, how would one study this?
Yeah, so humans demonstrate abstract ideas or mental representations all the time. We use language, and language by its very nature is an abstraction. So when I say, to my dog when I say, do you want to go to the park, right? Park is an abstraction of the actual physical place of the park, right? It stands for the park. That's a little bit of an abstraction, but we actually spend a lot of time talking about much more abstract ideas like peace and justice, right? And so humans can talk about and understand and demonstrate in other ways that they have access to these big abstract ideas.
And with language, we can clarify and achieve shared understanding.
That's right.
Well, you're talking about one thing, I'm talking about another thing, and we can sort it out with with non-humans. We just assume you understand or you don't understand.
That's right.
And
that's
you may actually be responding to not me saying park, but just my enthusiasm. Like, I don't know what you're asking me to do, but you seem excited, so I'm excited. Whatever it is we're going to do.
Yeah, and it could very well be, too, that so when we're using symbols like language or numbers, right, just the use of that symbol is an abstraction away from this idea of, so for example, the number 100 is an abstraction away from, say, 100 pennies on the counter, right? It allows us to sort of conceptually talk about something in a way that we couldn't really discuss it otherwise. So for example, let's say that I have $121 in my bank account, then I want to go buy something that costs $125. I know immediately that I don't have the money to cover that because I know the difference between 121 and 125. I can tell that really fast. But if instead I had $121 bills on my counter, it might be harder for me to say, can I cover that $125 purchase, right? Because you're just looking at this big number of bills, and it's a lot harder to compare those quantities, 121 to 125, than it is to use the symbols, right, to sort of talk about the numbers. So these abstractions can actually get us lots of places. I mean, abstractions get us math, right? They get us banking. They get us the ability to build a skyscraper. So they get us a lot of things that we humans rely on pretty regularly every day.
We rely on it, and we assume our dogs have some level of abstract understanding, but do they, or are they just reading us? Because we've talked about how well they read us. That's a marvelous attribute of dogs. But then that next level of actually being to process information or recall things in an abstract way, can dogs actually do that? Is that what this study is looking at?
Yeah, that's what the study is exploring. Back to this idea of it being really hard to ask dogs this question, I think some people look at their dogs and think about the kinds of things that they're seeing their dogs do and think, well, my dog has to have an abstract concept of friendship or love or something like that in order to be showing this kind of behavior. My dog recently adopted kittens. I say she adopted them because they are her kittens. I am just here.
You were just the delivery system. You brought the kittens into the home and turned them over to her.
Exactly, exactly. And the way that she interacts with them is very much in a very sort of social, very much these are my babies kind of a, she's kind of raising these kittens in a kind of way that if you were to look at this behavior through a human-like lens, you would say she has an abstract idea of family or of friendship that includes these kittens, but doesn't include the boxer that lives next door, right? Yeah. Does not feel the same way about that boxer. And so you might look at her behavior and say, she's got this abstract idea of friendship, and she knows that these kittens belong in that abstraction, but that that boxer does not belong in that abstraction.
And beyond that, what those relationships mean, I have a responsibility for these kittens. I have no responsibility for that boxer.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. And so, you know, I think we humans naturally want to look at other animals and think about the world through their eyes as if they were little people, right? I think that Olive, my dog, has this sense of family about the kittens, a sense of obligation and sense of friendship with them, because that's how I would feel if I were in her shoes, right? But as scientists, we have to take ourselves out of the equation. We have to say, I can't really simulate what it's like to be a dog because the dog life is so very different than my life. And we have to think about how can we actually measure abstract ideas? And this becomes really difficult very quickly. Some of the people who have dogs trained up to use the buttons, you know, the mm-hmm. communication buttons, will train their dogs up to communicate about abstract ideas. So, for example, Bunny was using her touch screen to talk about dreams, and that's a pretty abstract idea. I'm not convinced that Bunny actually knows that the word dream actually means the thing that happens to you in your head when you're asleep, but that's one way that some people have been trying to get at this idea of abstraction is, okay, the way that we do abstract things is that we talk about them, so maybe we can talk about them, maybe our dogs can talk about them too. How you tell a dog about what an abstraction is another question. We don't need to go down that road, but I think it's a little bit iffy. I don't really think those examples are great evidence, like dream, that a dog has an abstraction. So this study tried to look at an abstract idea here, which is this idea of repetition, or this idea of, again, do something again. And again is an abstract idea because again can mean lots of different things, right? So I can do a jumping jack and you can say again, and that means do another jumping jack. Or I could bake a cake and you could say again, and that would mean bake another cake, right? And so again can mean lots of different things in lots of different contexts. And so that's what they were getting at here is, can dogs learn this abstract idea of again and really repeat what they have done before, regardless of what that previous action was? And so that's this abstraction that they're trying to get at here. It's this abstract idea of againness, mm-hmm. or repetition.
As you state in your examples, context is important. As humans, mm-hmm. we take that for granted. It's just baked into, mm-hmm. we're talking about cakes, so I'm thinking about baking, yeah. but it's baked into our understanding of something that if you give me some of the cake and I say, mm-hmm. I like it, mm-hmm. it's obvious it is the cake mm-hmm. that I like. I'm not talking about the movie that I went to the night before, right. or the outfit that you're wearing. There's mm-hmm. myriad things in the environment that could be it,
right.
but there's no question it is the cake.
That's right.
And but we do know that with something that doesn't understand abstract
yeah.
language or concept, that would be very confusing. I like yep. it. It's like, well, I don't understand like,
right.
first of all.
Yes. Yeah.
And it could be an infinite number of reference.
And we know that dogs are really bad at context, right? So you train a dog to sit in the kitchen, they may or may not know how to sit in the living room, right? You, when you're training a dog, you have to train them in lots of different contexts in order for them to be able to generalize and understand, oh, sit means sit anywhere I am. And so we know that they struggle with these ideas of context anyway. So in some ways, this sort of deck is stacked against this study working out, right? Because they are not great at context. And they do find that dogs have some trouble here with context, when we'll get there, but not as much trouble as I would have thought.
So yeah. How did they connect the dots, or how did they try to connect the dots between
yeah.
abstract and how do you find it in dogs?
So they did several experiments, but I'll just talk about the ones that I think are the most compelling. So what they did was they had dogs that already knew how to do some commands. So things like sit or down and spin and like a stand up on your hind leg is kind of a deal. So they already knew several commands that they were really good at following when they began the study. And then they taught the dogs again, this again command. And the way that they taught them this command was pretty clever. So they would say to them, sit, and the dog would sit. They would then say, again, sit, and the dog sat. And then they would gradually fade away that second cue. So sometimes they would say, again, sit, and then sometimes they would just say again until they were only saying again. And they did that with three or four, so a handful of cues. So basically they're getting that again and then the cue for a handful of different behaviors that they know how to do on cue.
So they're not just adding again to sit. Again means the same as sit.
Right. Right.
Because they have to shake or whatever.
That's right. They have to do what they just did a minute ago. So you just sat, now do it again. You just lay down, now do it again. You just spoke, now speak again.
Here's the part of the podcast where our listeners who are dog owners are pausing and trying this with their dog.
Yeah.
They're going to get back to us in a couple days to finish the rest of this podcast because they want to see, can I get my dog there?
Yeah, yeah. The study took place over 18 months, so give yourself some time. It's not easy to teach an abstraction. and then the question was, okay, so you've learned it in these few contexts. I've told you sit again. I've told you down again. I've told you, I don't know, speak again. But now, what about if I ask you spin again, right? I've never done this before. I've never told you to spin and then do it again. I've never paired those things together. Do you have this abstraction, this abstract idea that again means do the thing I just did again? When they first ran this study, no, they didn't. Dogs needed 6 exemplars. So they needed to have 6 cues that they heard do this again with before they were able to generalize. Dogs are bad generalizers. They're really bad generalizers. Mm-hmm. And so they just needed a little more training, a little more examples of what it was that you wanted them to do before they generalize. We know that generalizing is hard for everybody. Humans are better generalizers than dogs, but we're also not super great at it. So generalizing is hard, and the dogs just needed more examples. Once they got those more examples, then they were off. Then they had it. So you could ask them not only to do a cued behavior, so something that they already knew how to do and to do it again, but they could do a spontaneous behavior and you could tell them again and they would do that behavior again. So if your dog, let's say that they, well, in the article that you sent, the futurity one, they gave the example of the dog cocking its head in a cute kind of a way. Mm-hmm. So, and you might want to get a picture of that, right? So if your dog just did that, you could then say again, and they would do that again, right? So once they had those 6 examples, they understood what again meant and could apply it in these new kinds of ways, which was pretty cool. So, yeah.
What I'm curious is if the animal wranglers that they use in movies, televisions, commercials, they rep things. So if anyone's seen a behind the scenes of Frasier, where they're showing Moose the dog, its cues, they repeatedly take Moose through whatever he has to do, you know, come out of the kitchen and then hop up on the couch. So a treat to get him out of the kitchen, a treat to get him up at the couch, a treat to get him to sit. They do that a couple times, run it with an actor or a stand-in, and then the dog can do it. Has any wrangler stumbled across, oh, I can just tell them again, and never put together that this is a big deal?
Yeah.
Like accidentally performed this study and just take for granted that, oh no, this is how you use dogs on set.
Yeah. That's a really great question. I would love to know the answer. Yeah. And I don't know if any.
Yeah. And it's conceivable that they never would. Yeah. Because historically, this is the way they do it, and it works. Yeah. We just cue them through, and not think about, teach them the concept of again, show them once or twice, and say again, and the dog's got it.
Yeah, there is a training method. It's not again, it's not this repeat, but it's called do as I do. This is one where you show the dog what you want them to do, and then the dog does the thing that you just did. And so you might think this is the same kind of thing, right? This abstract idea of kind of copy the behavior, but the dogs don't really need to hold that idea in their head, right? It doesn't need to be this abstract thing. It really can just be the thing that I just saw, I'm doing that thing now. Mm-hmm. Whereas with this repeat, I'll get to why it's different here in just a second.
Because you could say a word in a language I don't understand, and then I can say it, but that doesn't mean I understand the word.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. Exactly. And so the goal of this study was to have the dogs repeat something that was entirely self-generated, right? So this is something that I have done. This is entirely my own thing, which is why it was really cool that they could get the dogs to repeat a behavior that they generated themselves, right? The dog did this behavior on its own. Now I want you to repeat that. So this is crucial because the dog isn't just remembering the cue that you gave them. So if, let's say you asked them to sit and they sat and then you say, okay, repeat, they could just be remembering not the repeat cue, but the cue from before that, right? Mm-hmm. Like it could just be a request to do the last thing I asked you to do. But when the dog is generating the behavior themselves, it can't really be about do the last thing I asked you to do because you didn't ask them to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So it has to be about what they themselves are up to. Yeah.
I don't know if this is quite the same thing, but if I just was in Italy and I didn't speak Italian and mm-hmm. I just spontaneously said tazza, and because I've heard other people say it, so I just say tazza, and the Italian person with me points at a cup, I make connection. Oh, the thing I just said connects to the thing they pointed at.
Mm-hmm.
And I could repeat tazza. And now I've made that connection. So it's kind of making that leap.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not apples to apples exactly, but it's an abstract thing that I've self-generated and I've connected this thing I've done
mm-hmm.
to what you're conveying to me, or our mutual understanding of what you want me to do or what yeah. we're going to do.
And crucially, you understand that a glass and a mug and a rocks glass, right? Like mm-hmm. all these different kinds of cups mm-hmm. fall underneath that same label, right? And so there you're sort of creating an abstraction. And so what the dogs seem to be doing is doing something similar, which is like, oh, a sit or a head tilt or a, you know, many things could fall underneath this category of again. And I need to sort of select from all the things that could fall under this category of again, the correct thing that does. So having this abstract idea of like, again, just means what I just did. And I have to know my own self what that was. I can't rely on something external to me to know what that was. It's pretty advanced. Another sort of crucial step that they did, in addition to asking the dogs to self-generate and then repeat their own self-generated actions, was that they would ask them to repeat. So let's say they had them sit and then they asked them to repeat. And then their next cue would be repeat again. And so here, repeat again only works if you understand that repeat means do the same thing you just did. If you think it has to do with the cue you were given 2 times ago or the last time, right? Sit, repeat. Oh, it means sit. Well, now sit, repeat, repeat. Oh, what does that mean if I don't understand what repeat actually means? The dogs really didn't have a problem with this. They were quite good at following this cue. And again, showing that they really understood that repeat means do the same behavior that I just did, whatever that behavior might be.
The previous times you've been on, all the studies we've talked about, and then including this one in this mm-hmm. episode, the studies themselves are fascinating and mm-hmm. informative. But to me, what's really fascinating is that next step. Oh, we've learned something.
Yeah.
Well, now, where can we go with this? How can we adjust the study to learn something else, or to learn what other behaviors or cognitive processes are related to this one, and yeah. just expanding on that. And what I really like about this one, people can play with this at home. This is another thing you can do with your dog that's not the same thing that you do all the time with your dog. Your dog needs a variety of stimuli,
mm-hmm.
a variety of things to do. They love going to the dog park, but maybe going to different dog parks. And maybe the reason they like going to the dog park is they get to meet different dogs and see different people, and there's different smells because of the things that happen there. So just going for the same walk every day doesn't stimulate your dog. Here's something you can play with on your own. Mm-hmm. And I will put a link in the description of the video we did with Peaches when I took your online non-credit class.
Yeah, yeah.
That gave, you know, here's a little study you can do at home to test your dog. So that's something you can do at home. But also, yeah, people could play with this on their own without being a trained behavioral psychologist.
That's right. Sorry. Speaking of Olive, my dog just threw her bone on the floor. So sorry for the big crash. that's right. I think this is a great one that you could do with your dog. It's going to take time to train your dog up because, again, they're going to need to see what again means in a lot of different contexts. But once you have done that, you can do all kinds of different things with your dog. Here today, it is rainy and nasty out. And usually Olive would go for a nice long run and then settle down with me while I do some writing. But today we're not going to get that opportunity because it's going to storm all day. Instead, we do things like this, right? Mm-hmm. So let's learn something new, or let's, challenge your mind in some new kind of a complicated way. And this is a great one because it's a challenge. It's not going to be easy for the dog, but it's one where they could have a high success rate. So especially if you start off with asking them something that they know really well, and then give them that again command paired with that cue. So sit, again, sit, and then start fading that second sit. I think your dog could learn it with a high rate of success. It's going to take them a while to generalize, but practicing that on a rainy day is a great use of your time and a great way to entertain your pup.
Well, the fact that this would take a long time, I'm going to consider a positive attribute of this activity. Yeah. It's like, mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah.
They're not going to get bored with this in a day or a week, that you're going to work on this for a long time. And it's going to teach you patience. And you're also going to refine your dog training skills.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. They use only positive reinforcement in this study. And you should too, if you do this at home with your dog. But I think it could be a really great way to see the kinds of ways your dog can show you that they can learn and expand the boundaries beyond just operant conditioning.
If you do this at home and you take the time to maybe not video every part of it, but like your first attempt, and then a week later, a month later, just sort of track your progress and then put together either your own video or just have the raw footage and you want to share with me. If you do not have a YouTube channel, we'll put it on the Rosie Fund YouTube channel. You can contact us through rosiefund.org and we'll sort out how you can deliver either a finished video or raw footage for us to put together. And we'll post it on rosiefund.org and we'll tell everybody about it on Dog Words.
Great. Yeah. That'll be fun.
So what else are you working on?
Yeah. So changing institutions is always a big move. I'm currently, as we speak, my new dog lab is being built. So I'm doing a lot of talking to people about what goes where and, you know, what kind of floor and what kind of lighting and all of that kind of thing. So my summer has been mostly spent with moving and getting settled into my new institution. I'm excited to start doing research again in the fall. So I've got some plans to do some follow-up work to some projects that were interrupted because of COVID, some things on self-control, for example, and some studies on number cognition, how dogs think about math. So these are projects that I'm excited to get started on once the new semester begins and once my lab is up and running. So it'll be fun.
Well, not that we need an excuse, but that certainly is a built-in one for our next visit with Dr. Ellen Furlong. We'll circle back when you've settled in and get some updates on your studies, and as is exemplified in the study we've just discussed today, you're not going to do something and then in 24 hours turn around and say, here are the results.
Right. Yeah.
So we'll give you time. We're not going to check in with you the second week of the semester and say, what have you learned about dog behavior and non-human primates? And we'll give you time to actually get some results. We'll wait to the second week of class.
Okay. Well, I'll be out of the country the first week of the class, so it'll be going to a conference. So it'll be a little quick, but we'll figure it out.
Well, maybe we'll check in with you after the conference to find out what you've learned about the state of research. Is there anything in general, whether it's dog related or other research into cognition, that is sort of exciting? What's the latest that's out there?
Oh, because I've been moving, I've been a little bit out of the loop. lately, but I'll say that in my little world, my former thesis student, Zach Silver, and his advisor, my former advisor, Lori Santos, published an article last year about pet dogs versus shelter dogs, looking at differences in pro-social behavior. So the highly trained agility dogs. So highly trained agility dogs were more sensitive to differences in pro-social behavior. So really determining who they wanted to spend time with more, somebody who was helpful versus somebody who was unhelpful. Mm-hmm. Agility dogs were really good at this and preferred spending time with the helpful person, but the pet dogs showed no difference at all. So Zach has been sort of poking around at why that would be. And we collected some data not long ago with some of the agility dogs, and we hope to have answers about why the agility dogs are so much better attuned to this pro-sociality in humans than pet dogs. So stay tuned. I don't have an answer yet, but that's what I'm excited about coming up next.
Did you control for breed? Because there's the stereotype of agility dogs being border mm-hmm. collies and Australian shepherds and agile, but also super smart.
Yeah, we had of the same, a similar distribution from each of the groups. So we had a similar number of herding dogs and a similar number of sporting dogs. Of course, our pet dogs were more likely to be mixed breeds mm. than the agility dogs, but it was a similar distribution of breeds. So yeah, there are some interesting breed differences out there as well.
I'm excited to discuss that. So we'll follow up on that. It's always so great to have you on a conversation that I wish could go on all day, because we never run out of interesting things to talk about. Interesting to me, I assume interesting for our listeners, but as long as you and I are having a good time, that's all that matters.
That's right.
So I look forward to having you back, and whatever updates you have, let us know and we'll get you back on Dog Words.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun as usual.
I'm Phil Hatterman, and you've been listening to Dog Words, presented by Rosie Fund. Thank you to Dr. Ellen Furlong for joining us today. Links to her fun and enlightening previous visits are in the archive. Bar K Dog Bar in Kansas City was Peach's Delight's favorite place on earth. Next time on Dog Words, we tour their newest location in St. Louis. A big thank you to alternative string duo The Wires, featuring cellist Sasha Groshong and violinist Laurel Morgan Parks, for playing the wonderful music you've heard on today's and previous episodes of Dog Words. Supporting The Wires supports our mission. Learn more about The Wires, including their concert schedule, at thewires.info, and download their music on iTunes. Check out fiddlelife.com and learn to play fiddle and cello fiddle online from Laurel and Sasha, even if you've never played before. Join Laurel and Sasha as they explore new music and delve into the inspiration behind each work as hosts of Sound Currents on 91.9 Classical KC. Click on the Sound Currents link in the description for more information. Go to rosiefund.org to shop and get links to our social media. As always, please download, follow, rate, and share Dog Words. This helps us with sponsorships, then Rosie Fund can help more dogs. Send us your comments, questions, and suggestions via the contact form at rosiefund.org, and let us know if you would like to be a sponsor or a guest of the Dog Words podcast. Thank you for listening to Dog Words, and remember, we save each other.